Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way, thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel, or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
It's time for the Del Olalea Show
on ESPN 97.5.
Now broadcasting live from the Huntington Bank Studios, here's Del Olalea.
When the world was a time of this and that, I was young, didn't know to hold it back. Now we're here in the world, something else. We can leave any day and call for help. We were gods, nobody was above me. The A on my chest like a Dolce. The A on my chest, put your fist up. The A on my chest like a chipmunk. Alvin, Theodore, breathe in, breathe out. Me and more, breathe in, breathe out. Never mind, it was time. Number nine, let my lies be line with a death wish. Be right, didn't help. No name on the guest list. Hold on, we're destined.
Welcome into the show. And I was thinking about this because ESPN had a segment, I think it was on NFL Live, discussing the Texans and not the defense, which is what you would normally talk about considering what they're capable of and what they've done so far. The defense is so good, they now have to talk about the offense to see if the offense is good enough to complement the defense enough to go on a playoff run. It's pretty much what it is, because everyone knows how elite the Texans defense is. Is the offense good enough not to sink the ship? So we'll hear from a couple of ESPN pundits about that. And when you start to look at total yards, like where the Texans rank, I looked at it and I am surprised that a couple playoff teams are below them. Like, you would get Pittsburgh, you know. They're not particularly offensively gifted. They have DK Metcalf and an aged Aaron Rodgers out there playing quarterback. They have, of course, Carolina is behind them, who is fighting for a playoff spot with Bryce Young and Tet McMillan out there and Rico Dowdell and all that stuff. Not a big-time offensive football team. Philly, we know, is in the midst of struggling. They're a couple spots behind the Texans when it comes to total yards. And before their most recent struggles, people would have said Philly is a real contender, but they haven't been very good offensively all year. The Tampa Bay Bucs have a worse offense, at least when it comes to total yards per game, than the Texans. That was the one that surprised me. I know Mike Evans has been out, Chris Godwin in and out. They've had their injury issues on the offensive line. But now I just ripped off several teams who are in the playoffs or fighting for the playoffs that are behind the Texans. So as bad as it's been in some games, there are teams faring far worse, or at least a little bit worse than the Texans when it comes to offense. So this may be a year, and I read off all these teams, and the only one who has a defense even comparable, you would probably say, are the Eagles. Maybe this is a year where you can get carried by your defense as long as your offense doesn't screw it up. They're ranked 20th in total offense. The Bucs are at 22nd, Eagles 24th, Pittsburgh's at 27th. And the Ravens, who we know have had their problems, are just one spot ahead as far as total yards per game. So, hey, it ain't so bad, right? And when you pair it with the defense that can do what the Texans defense can do, you might be more than capable of picking off a couple teams in the playoffs. And that was part of the discussion. We'll hear from Mina Kimes a little bit later. But this was Dan Orlovsky yesterday. And I play this one first because it fits into the conversation about can the Texans make a run? And you'll hear that at the very end, what he thinks. But is this Texans team and their offense capable of complementing their defense? Here's what Dan Orlovsky has to say.
Like from the offense as well of late.
So last week it was the pocket movement by CJ, and this is not just last week, but it's been their trend for a couple weeks now. It's their sixth offensive lineman offense. Okay, so it's not just their run game, but I do like the fact that it's allowing them to be somewhat efficient in their run game. Six offensive linemen, Blake Fisher, the second-year player from Notre Dame, comes in for the tight end position. I think it allows the double teams to be a little bit more sound, them to at least get the run started. That's been a huge deal. This past week, they implemented a little bit more of the play-action stuff. Why does that matter? Because then, one, you can block a defensive end one-on-one with the tight end, that sixth tackle, and then that shores up the five offensive linemen, essentially blocking only three defensive linemen, gives you the chance to push the ball downfield. Six offensive linemen, again, down in the goal line, that red zone, the inside the five-yard line area, where so often defensive lines slant. Tight ends get beat on the inside. Having the body presence just confirms the win at the line of scrimmage. And this is an offense that doesn't need to be explosive all the time. It doesn't need to create a ton of big plays. It just can't be negative play dominant. I think that kind of core part of who they are offensively at least gives plays the chance to get started and then some shots down the field. CJ's a good enough player to make up for the other parts. I think their offense is good enough to make a playoff run.
You know, I don't know if that falls completely in the category of someone out there just saying stuff. We do a lot of that when we hear a coach just, oh, he's just saying stuff. I'm sure that's all well-researched and the video's very nice. But at the end of the day, the clips are from a game where CJ goes 15-31, gets hit 10 times, and Woody Marks doesn't have a good day running the football. That's how great the defense is, where entire segments have to be devoted to, well, they could be good enough. The offense could do some stuff that leads to a playoff run.
There's some good, there's some sprinkles of good stuff
look,
in here.
I know they barely break 20 points and
had negative yards in the third quarter.
Yeah, and some dumb radio host thinks we should ban offensive players from speaking on the show until they score three touchdowns. That dumb radio host being me.
I kind of stand by that.
Yeah, so, but look, they could do stuff. Once again, the offense are a bunch of bus riders. Even when it comes to how they're talked about, that's how great the defense is we're seeing. Where if you probably gave everyone some truth serum, they were like, the Texans offense, what are we talking about here? They're below average at best in some categories and worse in others. We saw how they didn't handle pressure on Sunday, right? We all saw that Sunday night, how they were completely inept anytime they – the Chiefs wanted to bring pressure.
No answers.
No answers for it. And the part of the discussion this morning was about the Texans are playing worse than their talent suggests they can be on offense. And while that might be true, I'm not sure. I'm not sure they're very talented offensively on the offensive line, which is a big problem. We are 13 games in. John said the next four, because of playing the Cardinals and the Raiders, who are bad, and of course the bad offensive line is in L.A. with the Chargers. And then you have the Colts, who we'll see what they are with Phillip Rivers probably starting that game. And their offensive line, who the Texans handled in their first matchup. It was these four games are about figuring things out and getting better. I mean, we've had 13 regular season games plus a preseason. Why is it going to get better now?
Yeah, you are what your record says you are.
And your offense is what it's shown itself to be.
By week four, no matter what, there's the Bill Parcells, you are what your record says you are. There's the Bill Belichick of, like, you don't really know what your team is until Thanksgiving. Sure. Well, guess what? We're past
Thanksgiving, yeah.
So I think that we can call it on this offensive line. To me, this offense for the Texans, to me, the biggest thing is the – is the ceiling of the league so low yeah. that it's like you can actually just clear this.
Yeah.
It's not a, are the Texans so good or is the offense so good? It's, is the defense so good that it can win you this? And there's not really any response from, there's not a team that you would walk into a game with being like, oh no, I don't think we can shut down their offense.
I think this offense is in the right conference. Like, yeah. if it was the NFC with what the Lions are capable of, even with how good the Texans defense is, we saw them against Seattle on the road, and the Texans defense made plays, but Seattle had Jaxon Smith-Njigba. They really had no answers for him, and they made enough plays to win that game. Hell, the Seattle probably could have scored 30-plus if yeah. they're not asking Cooper Kupp to throw passes in the high red zone. So they're in the right division, or excuse me, conference for this offense, because whether it's Drake May or Aaron Rodgers or this version of Lamar Jackson, and you know they own Josh Allen, at least in NRG, we'll see about if they have to go up to Buffalo. Could be a very different story. And of course, the Trevor Lawrence of it, who could be someone they see in the playoffs, maybe in round one. We'll see how it all shakes out. There's not, and of course, Bo Nix, who they've seen already this year. Justin Herbert, they dominated last year. There's not a lot of fear.
Yeah, the
opposing
low.
Teams in who they may have to face. The bar is low.
This isn't, I mean, even last year, like 2 years ago, like you could just look in past years of the AFC where it's like a good Chiefs team, a really good Ravens, and a really good
Bills team,
especially, and not just really good, really balanced, where they have good defenses and good offenses, believe it or not.
You can be that. Done.
Yeah. Maybe not in 2025 for some reason, but yeah, to me, this is no different. That's just the inverse of like a Cincinnati Bengals type team where their offense is so good. And it's like, can their defense just hold it together enough? Can they come together enough to where they're simply a bad defense and not worse than the league and you miss the playoffs because it's so bad? To me, that's what the Texans offense is. It's just, can it be not so bad that it doesn't ruin your chances in January?
I was thinking about some of the comparisons being made, and the Texans defense won't rise up the pantheon of all-time defenses unless they go on and, yeah. and win it all. But, you know, it's a compliment for the defense to get compared to the 85 Bears or the 2000 Ravens. You know what's not a compliment? For the offense to get compared to those offenses that were carried. Like, if you're C.J. Stroud and you hear your defense being compared to that Ravens team, you're like, oh, awesome. But in the same breath, hey, they had Trent Dilfer, so of course C.J. Stroud yeah. can get it done. I'd be like, wait a minute.
If they can win it with Trent Dilfer, we can win it with like, C.J. Stroud.
I don't think that's, you know how now it's two off seasons ago, C.J. was talking about himself in a certain pantheon. I don't think if Dilfer can do it, C.J. can do it. I don't think that's the comp he was looking for 3 years in. So Nico, Kaylee, C.J. and the rest, you're trending towards a spot where your defense may be historic, but you're also in the realm where people are going, hey, they can't be as bad as those other teams' offenses, right? Like Jim McMahon was an average quarterback and they won, so C.J. can do that, right? I don't think that's what C.J. thinks of himself, but that's where we're going right now.
And I'd prefer that they aim higher. I prefer
give me a Brad Johnson, the Brad Johnson Bucks team. Brad Johnson was pretty good and efficient that year.
Yeah, I do like Brad Johnson.
Yeah, I would take that. I would take 2002 Bucks if I'm the Texans offense over.
Yeah. Did they have a receiver? I mean, I know they had guys that stood out there.
Yeah, they actually had guys. Yeah, that no, it's more a war done Mike yeah. Allstott team.
That's what I think with the 85 Bears too. Where I was like, Texans don't really have a Walter Payton walking around.
That's very true.
They don't, and I get it was a different league back then, but the running back can't really carry you the same way.
Yeah, they had near his wash stature. Keenan McCardle had Joe Giravicious. Those were the receivers back then. Yeah. Names you know, but yeah. they weren't great. Certainly not at that point. So,
I think the Texans can be the Tampa Bay.
I think if I'm shooting for something, the 0-2 Bucks is what I'd look for the Texans, because anything else is you being sure team with the historic defense, but the offense being carried and being scoffed at on the way to a title.
Like they can't be the Legion of Boom. Seahawks. Like, the offense isn't quite Legion of Boom.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Offense worthy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And okay, are they above Broncos Peyton Manning?
2015. Well, CJ has a working arm, so
yeah, I was gonna say
I would say yes.
Although there wasn't any drop off from when they went from Manning to Osweiler.
And the Mills to CJ transition wasn't that big of a dip, if we're being honest.
The output, the how you get there, it's a little bit better with CJ because he can create.
Yeah,
on the
it's
run.
A little more entertaining how he gets to his numbers.
Mills, it's like he just knocks down the pins that are in front of him.
Yeah, CJ can make a couple things happen.
Yeah, make a thing or two happen.
But at the end of the day, it's still 20 points.
Yeah, so I think they're close to the Broncos.
The 15 Broncos.
Yeah,
how it's set up, how it came about. And if it turns out
you remind me of 40-year-old Peyton Manning who can't throw.
Yeah, another comparison he's not looking for, but one we may have to lean into. Because I'd rather do that than Trent Dilfer.
Yeah, no, Big Bad Brad might be the best we can do.
Yeah, of all the teams and quarterbacks we listed who won titles with great defenses and not-so-great offenses, the Brad Johnson-led Bucks is the best comp for the offense if we're trying not to insult them too much. All right, Keith, I see you. We'll get to you when we come back. Anyone else want to join us? 713-780-3776. Sean is currently wearing a University of Houston hat, but I'm going to ask him about the team he regularly roots for and, well, his mindset, considering at this time, the last couple years, he was already scheduled to be in a semifinal or his team was on the verge of winning itself into a semifinal.
Do you need me to walk you through the ropes of like...
Yeah, and also how it feels to go from the excitement and maybe the anxiety of possibly winning a national title to how you sit today. Man, I hope some of my guys play. Or maybe you don't care at all about that Citrus Bowl against the University of Michigan. So we'll talk about that. Keith, maybe you want to talk about Phillip Rivers because that kind of fits your profile. Maybe it's something else. We'll get to you and anyone else when we come back.
The Del Olalea Show continues. Now back to the Huntington Bank Studios with Del Olalea.
All right, let's get to these two guys. They held through the break. Appreciate that. Let's start with Charlie. What's up? Go ahead, Charlie.
Hello?
Yeah,
what's up? Are you talking to me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. No worries. My name's not Charlie. I wasn't sure. Yeah, I was just calling up. First thing is, I just got back in town, but last week I was listening to Jeremy Branham and Joe George talking about the Rockets and how trading for Giannis, getting rid of Shangoon, absolutely insane. I think those guys are untradeable. I'm not trying to get older. We've already got an old guy, Kevin Durant, who's solid, and even he has his hiccups every now and then, but we got him on the cheap, didn't give anything up for him. I don't want Giannis. And I'm kind of curious on your take on that. And then, you know, love listening to your show. RIP Paul. Jeremy should have been the one to go. Appreciate it.
I mean, a lot of nice things about this show, which I appreciate. Even nice words about Paul. And then you threw in that last thing.
So he's not a fan
of Jeremy and Joe's takes about...
Or Giannis.
Or Jeremy in general.
Yeah.
It's tough stuff.
Tough.
As far as... the thought, look, Giannis is a world changer. And what I mean by that is if you acquired him, your entire team changes how they operate.
You become a Giannis team.
Yes. You are no longer, hey, isn't it fun to have Amen do what he's doing and Reed? Everything is built around Giannis. And you acquire players that fit him. Now, you would assume that Amen, because of his talent and versatility, would fit. But that would be the next step after acquiring Giannis. What do you need to accentuate his abilities and to make him the best he can be? And how does it fit to go win a title? Right now, people have said this multiple times. I'm not the first to say it. Kevin Durant's like one of the more pliable superstars out there. You can just throw him in anywhere and he'll fit. Giannis is not that type of player.
Yeah. And you know, for not Charlie, because that wasn't his name, but whatever his name was. I agree just on the... in the terms of, like, not getting older. It's also, like, are we really throwing in our chips to try to get better than this Thunder team that's 22-1, 23-1? Like, I would prefer the angle of like, hey, let's take a long win, like let's try to have a longer look at this,
sure,
and hope, you know, kind of just play the numbers game of like, surely there'll be a playoffs for Shea, like one twists his ankle,
yeah,
or something,
turns an ankle, high ankle sprain.
Yeah, like, yeah, like I don't really know why anyone would be like, nope, this is our year to topple these guys.
And I did want to clean something up. When I said that Giannis isn't like KD because KD can fit anywhere, yes, you want Giannis.
Yeah, Giannis is also better.
Yeah, and you build around him. Yeah. But if you wanted to keep the structure of what you're currently doing, KD would be the better option, and they mm-hmm. went with that. And not Charlie laid out. It didn't cost as much and
yeah.
all those
yeah.
things. But as far as your thought, Rafael Stone came up under Daryl Morey. And Daryl Morey did not back off when the Warriors were the Warriors.
Yeah, yeah.
So I understand your mindset, like, what are you really going to do with these Thunder? And by the way, the problem is they're young too.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
you're going to have to at some point go after them, or you're going to wait the next 6 years before you try because of how young they are and the guys they have are locked up. So,
and they'll be drafting the
yeah,
Clippers
and
guy.
They got the Clipper, and they'll be taking a DeBanza or whoever, yeah. whoever they take. So I get what you're saying. Who's challenging this Thunder team? And the Giannis thing probably wouldn't happen to the offseason anyway, just yeah. because all it takes to get one of those trades together. But he asked my opinion on it. If not for the KD trade, I would have done it.
Yeah.
But now that you've made that trade, I wouldn't do it.
If I could have both trades, like whatever the best price that would get both the Bucks and the Rockets
you,
to say yes to, yeah. like this hypothetical Giannis trade, and the hypothetical KD trade, if you could give me those two trades in June, like put them on my desk and I could look at them, I might have picked the Giannis route.
Yes,
but since you've already done the KD trade, I don't want to have KD and Giannis. Like, I would rather see, you know, the young team through, because this is KD on a young team. This,
yes.
When you trade for Giannis, now it's Giannis and KD, you're now just a older team.
Correct.
So there's less like, hey, let's see how these guys come together. Maybe we can make a smarter trade down the road for another guy that fits with this group once they're a little bit more solidified.
And while you acquire KD to win a title, it is not like championship or bust and the season's a complete disappointment, because yeah. you have these young players you'll develop and they'll get another run at it and another run at it. And sure, that's probably not the most proper thinking, because it can go away
yeah.
in a flash, but at least you have the thought. If it's Giannis and KD, every year that you don't win is 1 year closer yeah. to a transition to a different team, because KD is getting older.
I was going to say, it's going to be probably another rebuild, because to get Giannis, Amin and Shepard just like off rip?
Minimum.
Yeah.
And just, however many picks it'll take.
As far as like the core guys,
sure.
that's like, and then, you know, Giannis, 30, 31 years old. By the time he's kind of
always retooling.
Yeah, you're aging out of the Giannis stuff. There's not like the next generation to take the baton there is right now with KD.
With Giannis and KD, if you didn't win it in year one, there's always the immediate pressure to retool and make moves to surround them with different players that you think would fit. This one is a more stable approach. They made the move. And unfortunately for them, they have a team in their own conference that is on track to set the record for most wins in an NBA season.
It's also because the Rockets are probably, let's just say, top four in the West.
Yeah.
They're among the three contenders to knock off the Thunder. I think there's a chance that if you like shake up the snow globe too much, like there's a chance you net out to be like a worse team to take down the Thunder. Like you become less athletic, you become less like dudes everywhere.
Yeah.
Less depth.
We saw how it played out in the playoffs last year, beyond of course the Pacers' final injury to Haliburton. Depth matters.
Yeah.
Being able to have 8 to 9 guys who can play at the level that you have to play at to compete with a Thunder matter. And the Pacers, youthful, can get up and down. And just had guys that they could lean on a night to night when one guy didn't have it. You can lean to a Nimhard or Mathurin. You need more than what it traditionally has been in the NBA. Yeah.
Nuggets versus the Thunder, where it's like the Nuggets had really like 4.5 guys that they trusted.
And then Aaron Gordon
into every game. Yeah, then Aaron Gordon gets hurt. MPJ was playing hurt. Russ was trick or treat the entire, like, where it's either good game or he shoots you out of it. Like, That's no way to live.
Yeah.
That's just no way to live.
Not against the Thunder. You probably need eight to nine because they may have like 10 or 11, but they don't have to get to 10.
And the Thunder and the Nuggets have the best player in the league, or if not, number two. And it still wasn't enough.
Because they weren't deep enough. Let's get to Matt. Matt wants to talk about, well, what has been the debate over the last like 7 days or so, even before then, but we got finality on it for Sunday. It was Notre Dame versus Miami, and the Miami contingent won out. What's up, Matt?
Hey, Dale. Hey, Sean. Love your show. As a Notre Dame alum, I'm just kind of cringing with all this whining going on. I mean, just you have a good draft class, a recruiting class. You got a good coach. You lost two games. You know, move on. The Notre Dame-Miami rivalry goes way, way back when they were like when the Miami first started its program. If you go walk around the bookstore at Notre Dame, you can see the banners of past seasons, records, and stuff. And they used to beat the snot out of each other for quite a while. I remember in the early '80s, and they were up like 45-0. They were throwing on fourth down. And you know, I was there senior year, Catholics versus convicts, and there's a buddy of mine, a dorm mate, who made that shirt and helped pass it out and distribute it. And that game, we knew in that the final game, 31-30, we knew that was the national title. Those are the two best teams in the country, and it was an amazing game. And so the rivalry has been going on a while. And aside from us, in addition to our other scheduling, Notre Dame plays Navy every year because in the 40s when World War II was going on and every able-bodied male was fighting, Notre Dame was an all-male school, and it almost closed because they didn't have the money, they didn't have the staff. And the Naval Academy of the Great Lakes loaned Notre Dame a little under $50,000, started an ROTC program, and basically gave us their practice jerseys and uniforms. So that's why we're blue and gold today. That's why they always play Navy. So anyway, bit of work with Notre Dame trivia, but I appreciate the Miami and Notre Dame rivalry.
Appreciate it, Matt. It goes as he laid out. They've been playing each other for a while. It started in 1955, and for some reason, every game was in Miami, the first like five of them. It feels like that was, hey, let's get the guys out of the cold. Let's send them down to Miami.
Let's make a visit to Miami.
Let's get a win. And although they did lose the second matchup, let's head down to the good weather and play a football game. Because all these games happen in October and November. It's probably the weather's turning in Indiana. Let's get on down there and play a football game. And Notre Dame certainly at the time was becoming a more and more national brand. So how do you do that? You go play some of these games.
They do the same or a version of it today where they alternate road games between Stanford and USC where they always are going to California at least once a season.
And usually it's later in the year. If you don't know the history, the Notre Dame USC game is either the last game of the year for Notre Dame and the second and last game for USC, depending on if they're playing UCLA, when it's in L.A. Of course, it's early in the year when they play like in South Bend. Yeah, and Stanford has played. I remember touchdown Tommy Vardell when he played for Stanford. Back when Notre Dame being on NBC was a big deal. It's not so much anymore.
I do, Matt, I do want to talk about how relatable it is when your team is in the middle of the college football playoff discussion. When your coach is, you know, going through the talking points in the post-game press conference on the field on ABC talking about their wins and their losses, like why they should be in, it's always unbecoming. It's always makes you cringe because it is like so like, guys, you don't have to beg for a spot. Like if you're in the position where you're begging for a spot or in Notre Dame's case, like, I don't just basically like throwing a fit because they didn't get picked in. Like it is embarrassing. Like as a fan, just like, God,
I was going to ask you this because there's like a conversation that this is what Notre Dame fans want. We just heard Matt. He's not what he wants.
No.
If Chris Del Conte was taking a tour and talking to everyone he could about how they felt misled and if only they had known beforehand, and they should have been ranked behind Miami or knew this was a real possibility and shouldn't have had the rug pulled. If he was on the tour that Bavak was on.
Yeah, quitting the bowl game.
Yeah, how would you feel as a Texas fan?
It's super embarrassing. It'd be terrible. It'd be the worst.
I know they feel aggrieved, so I'm sure some Notre Dame fans want their pound of flesh.
Complaining that is like,
but how much are you going to do?
Yeah, if you're criticizing the College Football Playoff Committee, chances are you'll hit something that your fan base will agree with.
Yeah, but going after Jim Phillips and because he was backing a conference
member.
Yeah,
how dare they back a full member of the ACC over a football
part-time
kind of member?
Then, yeah.
Like, all of that is just embarrassing. And then, also putting it, like, on the kids, basically, where it's like, well, we quit the bowl game because they didn't want to play.
Aren't
it's
you like, the adults?
Yeah, you could force them to play. Like, you're the team.
Yeah,
the athletic director, the coach.
The whole program was upset. From top down, from the decision makers to the players, but you're supposed to be the mentors, the adults, and if you think playing in a bowl game is a good idea, then you do it. And sure, guys will opt out. Maybe you don't want to be embarrassed because a lot of guys who are heading to the pros or just seniors don't want to play. Okay, fine, but don't use it as the kids were disappointed. You guys are supposed to be the leaders,
yeah,
not the ones allowing something. Like adversity strikes and you crumble. What are we talking about?
I was going to say, not to go full like high school coach here, but so something didn't go your way, so you quit? What a lesson.
It's not even me like leaning into all that, but these are the things they would say.
Yeah.
That's what they tell football players and young people.
I'm sure Marcus Freeman's had that talk with someone on that team.
Yeah, and then when big-time adversity hit, they decide, you know what? We're done here. We're done. So
all because they're scared of a big toaster with a Pop-Tart in the middle.
Yeah, they don't want – no, maybe it's the Bear Bachmeyer of it all. They don't want to be tackling a quarterback wearing 47. That's all. Over and over again. Meanwhile, they could have not just had Pop-Tarts. What's the crumble guy going to do? He's got to do something to
– Crumble guy needs to get his face out there a little bit more. He needs to be the Cody Campbell of BYU.
He made sure that Sasaki stayed at BYU, but you can't let your program head to Orlando and let Pop-Tarts be the dessert of choice that everyone's talking about. Crumble's got to make a move.
You got to have a brand activation sometime during that week.
Yeah.
Also, I'm always jealous of the Cody Campbell and the Crumble Cookie guy. That's exactly what I would be doing if I was either super millionaire or billionaire in the case of Campbell, where I'm like, all right, guess I'm becoming a mover and shaker in the world of college football.
Like, I know Crumble is considered, of course, a dessert, and Pop-Tart somehow has positioned themselves as
a breakfast
food.
Yeah, so, they're completely different.
So they're playing in different realms, I guess. But if you're the Crumble guy, much like a shoe company would make sure one of their people isn't seen in another shoe, he's got to make sure no BYU people eat Pop-Tarts, right? Like, even if they win the game.
I don't think he can police that. I don't know if he has that big of a stick to swing.
Well, he just paid all that money to make sure the coach stays. He doesn't have the ability to say, hey, no one's eating that Pop-Tart. In fact, once we win this game, we're going to have a box of Crumble cookies for someone to take a bite out of.
Maybe Sataki.
Yeah.
Maybe he can only get Sataki on that one.
Since he's paying for
him. I made you a very, very rich man.
I'm sure Penn State would have done it too, but look, I came over the top.
And you don't have to move.
Sataki better not eat a Pop-Tart.
No.
Crumble better supply him with a dessert for him to take a bite out of if they win the game.
Like how at the end of a game, they'll be when the two coaches are, going to shake hands in the middle.
Sure.
And they have the big state trooper next to them.
Yeah.
On the other side of Kalani Sataki should be someone handing him a box of Crumble cookies. So
this
he doesn't,
is what we're saying.
So he doesn't eat it.
Don't allow Pop-Tarts to be at the forefront because they have their thing, but you got a chance to make a move, Crumble.
Although it is, Pop-Tarts is breakfast.
That's
Crumble is dessert.
It's true.
They're way different.
One goes in a toaster as well.
They're way different.
Yeah.
Could not be more different.
I mean,
other than the amount of sugar and chocolate.
Yeah. I mean, one is a boutique product, kind of. The other is, hey, you running out the house? You want something? Take this. All right, we'll go to break with that. 713-780-3776 is the number. We'll hear from Ime Udoka because the Rockets are going to have some time off. There is no game for them because the NBA Cup is heading towards a conclusion in Vegas. The Orlando Magic and the Knicks booked their places in Vegas. So the Rockets already eliminated, not taking part, but they are practicing. So we're here from Ime Udoka. And if you want to join us, 713-780-3776. Hour one done. Hour two to go. We will be back.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're an RIA or looking to become one, Schwab Advisor Services is the Watson to your homes. Smart, dependable, always has your back. It's no mystery why they're the number one choice for RIAs who want to be the ultimate solution for their clients. With all the wealth services, technology, and support your firm needs, the difference is so obvious, it's Schwabvious. Follow the clues at schwabvious.com.